Phil Ramone is the extraordinary record producer behind a string of albums for both Paul Simon and Billy Joel, and more recently, duet albums for Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, and Ray Charles. His work has earned him 14 Grammys in all, and now he has written Making Records, the scenes behind the music to tell the stories. To get started in our conversation, I decided to get the definitive answer to the question of what does a producer do?
I feel like a director is to the movie. Producers in the movie business are about the people who put together the project and the money, et cetera, and kind of make a whole other kind of decision. Whereas in records, we kind of make it all in the sense of production, what the values, the musicians, the choices, the songs. It's always in coordination with the artist there's a great relationship that is set up there, plus the record company.
Now, why would somebody like Paul Simon, Paul McCartney, these people you've worked with who are consummate musicians, have made many, many records, why do they need a producer?
Well, the truth is, I think it's about the honest friend that you have in the control room beside one of your relatives. You know, this is somebody who is objective, who is understanding of the music and the engineering, somebody who is not going to lie to you and feather you up and make you think you're great when things aren't always great. It's the most personal time of an artist's life is making a record.
Now, you were a violin prodigy. Is it important to be a musician? Is that language important to speak?
I think it's helpful. I don't think it's an absolute imperative thing, but you couldn't get by with the kind of music that goes on and on without having a deep understanding of it. Now, some people are not trained musicians but are natural musicians, and I think several artists are more comfortable not having a blabbermouth chord dropper, you know, or somebody who's just out to show you what kind of diploma they got in music school. It's more of the feelings, understanding how to direct an arranger, how to actually understand the arrangement and decide what works, what doesn't, what's too fulfilling orchestral-wise. That's the advantage. As long as you don't put your own two cents into the artist, other than helping them in any decision they have to make musically.
Now, were you ever one of these? Did you ever want to continue as a musician and were frustrated in that, or was the producing and engineering that you ended up doing just took over?
Well, it took over because I think I started violin when I was like 3.5, 4 years old. By the time I was 15, I guess I wanted to really find this attraction, and it probably was also in a dream. I'd like to direct a movie, or I loved being in the control room of television and radio at the time. I couldn't stop the draw, and it wasn't that I was unhappy performing. It was very fair to me. But there was something about directing other people, helping create sounds that had been started by people like Les Paul. And Tom Dowd just took a liking to me and taught me an awful lot.
One of the things I was noticing is that as an engineer, you did a lot of sessions early on with Quincy Jones, and I was curious as to what that relationship was like. Was he mostly an arranger and an artist at that point, or was he producing at that point also?
Oh no, he was already producing, and actually became the first African American vice president of Mercury Records. And you know, he was in charge of a tremendous amount of signings that went on at Mercury. He also obviously did some diverse music, coming from doing Billy Eckstein or Sarah Vaughan into Leslie Gore. It's My Party was his baby. You know, I loved our relationship. It's still as close as ever, if not closer. We're really best of friends, and you learn a lot from him. His charm, his ability to think outside of the box, literally, with so many artists and having to be a diplomat. Q is the word. He's the man.
We're talking with Phil Ramone. He has a new book about his work as a producer and engineer called Making Records, The Scenes Behind the Music. And you mentioned It's My Party, and there's an interesting discussion about that that points out a lot about the music business back then. What happened with that song?
Within 3 days of its life, it was on radio. And that's the part of music business that doesn't quite exist today, although the internet is really helping that back into a play. Leslie was had cut the record with Quincy on a Saturday. I got a call because Quincy had run into Phil Spector somewhere, and he was telling him about this great song called It's My Party, and he was cutting it with some famous artist. And the race was on. The publisher, I guess, had shown it to, obviously, both parties, meaning Spector and Quincy, and didn't say quite the thing you would expect, that you have an exclusive. And I guess one of them misunderstood that. Anyhow, the race was on. Sunday we recorded and mixed everything that needed to be mixed, and that night we cut what they used to call acetates, which was to get to the radio station on a hand-cut disc, and on Monday this record was flying.
It's My Party from Leslie Gore, a recording engineered by our guest today, Phil Ramone, the engineer and producer who has a new album called Making Records, The Scenes Behind the Music. And another track, Phil, that you were the engineer on was Girl from Ipanema. Astrid Gilberto sang on the Stan Getz Joao Gilberto session. And that was,
yeah.
Was that planned?
No. We had the song, and Joao was going to ask his wife, Astrid, to sing it in Portuguese. And suddenly, Creed Taylor, who was the producer of the event, said, we have an English lyric here. And I heard that Sarah would love to hear the song, so Sarah being Sarah Vaughan. And we had to get it over to Quincy the next morning. So she sang really what is the demonstration record of that song to the music. It sat around. Sarah didn't record it. And months later, Creed Taylor released it, and it was the B-side of the Stan Getz record at the time. In those days in radio, you had an A-side and a B-side. Well, the B-side became the phenomenal record of all time.
Absolutely. It's Girl from Ipanema. And the engineer on this, Phil Ramone.
Tall and thin and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah. When she walks, she's like a samba that swings so cool and sways so gently, that when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah. So sadly, how can he tell her he loves her? Yes, he would give his heart gladly, but each day when she walks to the sea, she looks straight ahead, not at he. He smiles, but she doesn't see.
Mm-hmm. Girl from Ipanema, Astrid Gilberto, Joao Gilberto, and Stan Getz. Of course, a song that is still played so much today. And the engineer on that session is our guest today, Phil Ramone, who is probably, if you have a Phil Ramone-produced record in your collection, it's probably any of a myriad of albums that he worked on with Paul Simon. And Phil, how did you and Paul first meet?
Well, I got a call one day, and you know, lots of people play jokes on me about things like, there's a Paul Simon on the phone for me, you know, and I go, sure, sure. And I picked up the phone, and there's that very distinguished voice, that very unique voice. And he said, hi, this is Paul. I hear, I'd like to talk to you about something because I hear you're good. And I said, oh, okay. And we went in the studio, and we did a one song on that particular Paul Simon record. It was his first solo record. We did Me and Julio down by the schoolyard. And Me and Julio just had this unusual sound. What it was, to be honest with you, was that the guy playing electric guitar hadn't plugged in yet, and I just mic'd it for fun because I loved the percussion sound of it. Those adventures and those things that you do sometimes in the studio are what suddenly become a very important part of the record business, in the sense that it's inventive and you didn't plan it, and it makes you hear a sound that you've never heard before.
Mama pajama rolled out of bed and she ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law. Oh, what did mama saw? It was against the law. The mama looked down and spit on the ground every time my name gets mentioned. Papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
That's Me and Julio down by the schoolyard, the first time that our guest, Phil Ramone, worked with Paul Simon. And, of course, that relationship went on for years and years. Have you had the experience of having to convince an artist to do a song that you love and maybe other people do, but they're just not sold on at all?
Yeah. A couple of times with Billy Joel, there were songs that he thought were kind of just ordinary, not really up to where he felt the songs should be. Just the Way You Are is a famous one of his that he'd sort of given up on, sort of felt it was a kind of a wedding song. Funny enough, it's turned out to be. But he really felt very adamant that it was never going to work. And if we hadn't come to a day in the album where we were short at least one song, and I kept asking, could we at least run it down a couple of times? The band was not in a great mood about doing it. But finding a new groove for it, I found a thing for the Fender Rhodes. It's called a Stone Phaser that I was trying out. It became a sound that Richard T., a great, great keyboard player, used over and over, and it was a thing that got to Billy because we plugged it in and he started playing the same thing he had been playing on acoustic grand, and it had this warm, cuddly feeling.
Don't go changing to try and please me. You never let me down before. Don't imagine you're too familiar, and I don't see you anymore. I would not leave you in times of trouble. We never could have come this far. far. I took the good times, I'll take the bad times, I take you just the way you are. Don't go trying some new fashion, don't change the color of your hair. Have my unspoken passion, although I might not seem to care. I don't want clever conversation, never want to work that hard. I just want someone that I can talk to. I want you just the way you are.
Just the Way You Are from Billy Joel, one of the artists that our guest today, Phil Ramone, had a very special relationship with. It's funny, Phil, you got this book, Making Records, and you'd think in this interview with some people we'd be telling the whole book, but we're not even scratching the surface with all the things you've been involved with. Now, I did want to talk about something that you've done a lot lately and you seem to have a real affinity for, and that's working with artists doing duets. And I guess the Sinatra duets would be one of the most famous ones you did. But, of course, the Ray Charles duets albums, and now with Tony Bennett. Now, not only do you have the ego of the artist, but you have the ego of the guest. Is that a particularly difficult situation?
Sometimes I call it the Kissinger method. you go in there to be the diplomat. But it's fun because you're dealing with people who are so admired. Sinatra, it's obvious. Tony Bennett, it's obvious. Ray, again, same thing. Deep respect. They come in with a different feeling about using them. I mean, Quincy Jones says it best. He says, leave your ego at the door if you're going to do this kind of work. And he's right. No one gave me any grief at all, which is amazing considering the amount of time and effort spent in these three albums.
Do people prefer singing with the guest in the room, or do they prefer singing to a track sometimes?
I think that they actually are thrown into a new place. Many people on the Tony Bennett album said, wow, I didn't know it would be over so quick. Well, can I go in and fix things? And where's the track? No, you can't. We can adjust some things, but we'll do another take if you like. And when Tony looks around and smiles, it's those great moments. You know, that's what live is about. And you step up to the plate and you play better. You sing better. A lot of rock and roll and pop records have done the other way. And it's fun to do this. Believe me, it's a joy.
Which brings to the point, has technology made your job of getting that performance, that great performance, harder or easier? Because it's certainly changed.
I think for me it's become easier. I'm allowed to, the hard drive has got lots more time on it. Tape used to be have to keep staring at that tape machine because I used to run it all the time. And people get very frustrated. But on the other hand, some of the greatest takes ever have been early takes that I've been able to save. Technology keeps marching forward, and it's going to be even more exciting shortly, I believe.
Tell you what, Phil, pick something from the Tony Bennett duets album that you think we should hear.
Oh, wow. You've got a... one of my favorites in there, and I should never say that because it's like picking one of your children, is Diana Krall and Tony. I think it's got a swing and a giggle in it.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything started to hum. Still, it's a real good bet. Best is yet to come.
The best is yet to come. Babe, won't it be fine? You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine. Wait till the warm-up's underway.
Wait till our lips have met.
Wait till you see that sunshine day.
You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't that be fine?
The best is yet to come. The best is yet to come. Come the day you're mine.
Come the day you're mine. I'm gonna teach you to fly. We've only tasted the wine. We're gonna drain the cup dry.
Tony Bennett and Diana Krall with The Best Is Yet to Come, one of the picks, and he's trying not to play too many favorites here from Phil Ramone from the Tony Bennett American Classic duet album. Phil, how do you pick projects now? You must get thrown a lot of things. Are you ever... I mean, a lot of these things, when you first worked with Billy Joel, he was known, but he wasn't certainly a huge star as he became. Are you still encouraged to go after new things, or I'm sure people approach you for major artists all the time?
Yeah, I am absolutely interested in new artists, not only for choices, but listening to this week, I'll be auditioning a girl that I heard. Because the guy that was cutting my hair put on some earbuds on my head and said, listen, this is my niece. She's 13. So she's coming to New York. We're going to audition her. There are many young people that I just admire, like, you know, John Legend and Alicia Keys and people like that. And those are the people who are the new pace setters. And it's great when somebody calls you and says, listen to this. This is a real talent, and that's what you choose if you're lucky enough to do that.
Phil Ramone, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much for the time.
Phil Ramone, our guest, his new book is Making Records, The Scenes Behind the Music, and it's on Hyperion Books, and we'll be back in a moment here on the World Cafe.